time for another draftphysics.com and debatephysics.com video presentation. Yeah. So this would be a response to some brozo, whatever, comments. What the story is so far, and it's just so crazy and silly and stupid that, you know, it deserves some sort of comment. So anyway, I did make a while back, I don't know what, January 31st, so a couple of weeks ago, I went to the trouble to do a simple experiment where you just roll a one mass and you roll a two mass, you know, with the same force. You push them with the same force, and I think the overwhelming body of evidence is that the two mass will go half the velocity of the one mass. Now, if you could do the experiment perfectly. I did it less than perfectly, and the results were less than perfect, but they clearly indicated a tendency towards that being the truth. And clearly no idea of, you know, you can only throw an 8-pound ball 1.28 times faster than a 16-pound bowling ball, or 1.4 times as fast. No, the truth is you can throw it twice as fast. Applying your same effort, let's just call it, using the same calories, the same spring, for example. All right, so, well, I might as well just tell the rest of the story. So he never watched the video, and, you know, keeps asserting that, you know, blah, 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 he's proven and all this stuff, these exaggerated, silly titles. Anyway, and so he's posted some comment now conceding that, oh, yeah, I did the experiment, and, oh, yeah, that seems to indicate that, and blah, blah, blah. And so he's redoing it. Now, he has the air track, so the whole point of the even using the words air track is because it actually is functionally much better, because you don't have to worry about friction, and, well, you don't have to worry as much, depending on how good your air track is, of course. I mean, all of them are not perfect either. I mean, they still have air resistance, and there seems to still be some other friction sources. Now, you see, some of them have really good ones. You know, they give it a little push, and it'll go back and forth a number of times before it finally slows down and runs out of energy. But everything has that flaw of friction. That's the thing you're trying to get rid of, is the things that are dampening the effect. And they don't dampen it evenly. That's the problem. Heavy things lose their energy quicker than lighter things to the friction, because the friction has more contact with the heavier thing because of gravity, generally speaking. And, you know, you're trying to overcome those liabilities. And, you know, to get the right answer, to recreate as ideal a circumstance as possible, like some sort of in space, what would happen. And that's where the truth is happening, is in space. What we see is a version of the truth, but it isn't quite the truth. And so, you know, it's sort of, that's what all this debating is about, is, you know, showing the truth. You know, what does it really do? What's really happening? All right, so okay, I'll just continue with the story. So now he went out and purchased a higher frame rate camera. Now, who knows whether he actually bought a GoPro, who knows? Who knows what he actually bought? But anyway, they can do 128 frames, which is kind of a weird number anyway, but whatever, that part doesn't really matter. A second, which is pretty good. It's actually very good for these kind of experiments. I mean, it's not good for capturing water droplets or something, but it's good for a lot of things. Anyway, and, you know, the whole argument isn't about the frame rate of his videos. I mean, it was about the lighting, which was, you know, no matter what the frame rate is, bad lighting, you're not going to get a very good image. And the fact that he can't figure out the right camera angle. I mean, obviously, if you want to film something accurately, you know, the tape measure has to have the same size inches on one side as on the other side. And, you know, you have to have the right perspective in viewing something to see it for what it is. You'll see it distorted from distorted perspectives or angles. So those were the criticisms of his previous videos, and just that he hasn't really done the experiment. So anyway, he's offered the air track to Toadie, which makes absolutely no sense. So again, he's made a video explaining how to make one. He hasn't produced any experiments. You know, one tiny little crappy clip from a preposterously silly angle is all we have of the air track. So in 3 months, he hasn't done any experiments with it. And I've detailed all the ones that I find interesting. But you really could spend some time, you know, in the sense that it would, ideally, to exploit the value of the air track, it might be nice just to do the documentation, you know, all the way from, you know, the 1 pound bowling ball all the way to the 16 pound bowling ball, and show us exactly how long it takes it to lose its energy to, you know, a sequence of pins you would put in the way or obstacles, you know, and how fast does it lose its energy. I mean, I could use the train example, you know. Can't see that very well, can you? Yeah, wow, it's really invisible here. Let's see if I can fix that. Maybe it won't take too long. Let's see. It's already taking too long. Okay. This should. Nope, it's not doing it. Well, for whatever reason, it's not fixing the camera exposure. All right, I'll pause and fix it if I can. Well, not being very cooperative, so we'll just turn this camera on, and that should help. All right. So, you can see something anyway. All right, so what do I want to really talk about? Well, there's a few different things. So the air track is really... All right, so even like with ball bearings on a rail, you know, the problem is that if you actually put springs at both ends, they're going to run out of energy very quickly. So maybe it's for every foot the ball travels, there's a 3% drop in its energy. So this is something you have to know about ahead of time, you know, because you have to figure out when you're going to measure velocities and how you're going to measure velocities. So maybe. All right, so anyway, the air track experiment. So I sort of pointed it out the other day. It occurred to me that it would be very nice if somebody did the air track experiment where you just take, you know, the smallest mass you could make for the air track and all the way to the biggest and just do all of the combinations. Okay, so you bang the smallest, lightest air track piece you could make that actually functions on the air track and collide it into one the same size, smallest you can do, and then you go just keep making it gradually bigger, right? And then just do the inverse, have the biggest one crash into progressively all the way to the smallest one, you know. So just do the whole lineage and find out how much of the energy is transferred. Because it appears that, you know, when you take in many of these experiments, that it does, most of the energy does get transferred in almost every case. It's like the one mass and the two mass cart hit, and, you know, it appears in some of these videos as everything, like, say, 90% or 85% of the energy does end up in this object, and you know, only 10% and it stays here, whether it keeps going in the same direction or bounces back. You know, those kind of numbers. So it's obviously not some sort of linear straight line. It's a little bit more of a complicated line deciding how much of the energy is actually transferred to the other object. And clearly, in the case of fast things, they can't give fast motion to big things. They can only, you know, big things can't move fast. So in a sense, the velocity, you have to argue, has to be reduced. And it can't be, you know, like the Professor Lewin argument that you can't transfer 3/4 of the velocity into something that weighs twice as much, because then you have free momentum. Then these percentage numbers don't mean anything anymore. Well, anyway, so that'd be nice to see. I don't know why lately it's just difficult keeping this as straightforward as I want it to be. So anyway, so I guess I will point out just, okay, I'll do this experiment, but I'll, you know, the one I showed previously. All right, but let's see if... All right, well, anyway, so there's a bunch of experiments on the air track. So I've pointed out simple ones, right? You just push these things with a standard spring. You push a one-mass object with a spring. You know, you pull it, retract it. See, I'll explain how, you know, the laws of using springs, which Brozo doesn't understand, that pushing and hitting are two different things, right? Hit and push punching something, throwing something at something is different than pushing it. And he doesn't understand those differences. So when you're going to use a spring, there's no point if you're going to use the spring to throw something at something and then watch it move, because we already know those have complex rules. When you throw something, there's rules about how much the energy can get in there, how fast it can move, all that kind of stuff. So you want the spring to stay in constant contact with the thing you're pushing. And if it's not in constant contact, you're not going to get all the energy out of the spring. You can sort of understand that if I throw something and I have something bouncing, you know, if I throw it and it bounces between the thing and the spring, that I'm going to lose a bunch of energy to that bouncing. And it's not going to convey the energy of the spring. Or if the thing leaves the surface of the spring pushes and the thing leaves the surface of the spring, well, then the rest of the energy of the spring isn't going to get into the object because it's already going faster than the spring can move. So there's lots of rules about understanding that if you want to get the energy out of the spring, you have to make sure that there's some resistance to the motion, okay, that ensures that the spring is constantly in contact with the object and pushing it. All right, so that's one of the simple rules you have to understand if you're going to do the experiments. But why is he doing them anyway? Why is he going to do an experiment on, you know, with ball bearings when he has the tool that's idealized for it? So the idea with the air track, again, is just to compress a one mass and then compress a two mass with the same spring, compress them the same distance, and demonstrate once and for all that the two mass will go one half the velocity of the one mass. So whatever velocity the one mass leaves with, the two mass is going to leave with half that velocity. And that's the rule, that's the fact, that's how the universe works. Momentum is always conserved. Kinetic energy is fable, is a make-believe energy. That's why it doesn't have to be conserved, is because it's not real. It's just a notion, it's just a silly idea. The real energy is momentum, and that always can be explained where it went. Even when there's two blobs of clay and they hit each other, you can explain where the energy went because the blob of clay changes shape. So you can detail where the energy went. Eventually, it all goes out as radiation of some kind, you know, infrared, heat, and other stuff. But, I mean, that's where it goes. It goes in all kinds of directions that don't have anything to do with the original direction because it's clay. And clay can do that. All right. So that's messy enough now that I can take a pause. And I guess... So anyway, so he's offered the air track. Like he wants to give it away. So he hasn't done any experiments with it. He claims it works. Claims it's simple to build one, blah, 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 blah. And apparently it's not good enough for him to do any of these experiments. So it just doesn't make any sense at all. You just can't make any sense out of it. And now he's gotten a better camera to film something he doesn't film in the first place. It just doesn't make any sense. And now he's going to attempt to redo an experiment I did for no good reason, really, because it's not the ideal way to do the experiment. The air track's the ideal way. So, I can't make any sense out of it. It's just too silly. All right, so I guess I'll erase this and just talk a little bit about... the little bit about what you have to recognize when you're doing these experiments. So another fact that he's ignoring that's really important. I also forgot to mention regarding the air track, you know, the whole thing of whether there's springs or no springs, you know, and so when you do the experiments, you do them without springs. Because they say the word elastic and inelastic, and those aren't the two categories. Because there's the third category of storage. And that's a huge difference, you know, where you're storing the energy and then re-releasing it when you add springs. And so obviously that changes the distribution of the energy between the two objects. So you're not going to find the basic rules without doing the experiments. And clearly conventional physics hasn't done the experiments. It hasn't progressively gone from, you know, 1 ounce hitting 1 ounce to 1 ounce hitting 2 ounces to 1 ounce hitting 3 ounces, 1 ounce hitting 4 ounces. It just hasn't bothered to do all those experiments, even though, you know, they could do them in an hour. But anyway, all right, so the other thing he doesn't understand is this. Okay, you're going to measure a velocity, okay, and ideally, I think it's mechanically is the way to do it. So yeah, I think the frame rate thing works very well in terms of recognizing that it's taking consistent photographs in time intervals, and that that's a very good way of measuring how fast something's going by how much distance it traveled in a certain number of image frames. But the thing you have to be aware of is that it's losing speed as it's traveling. So if you're going to try to measure something's velocity, ideally you measure it, you know, its initial velocity. So when it hits something, you want to know its velocity when it hit it. Well, you measure close to the point where you hit it. You don't measure over a long distance and average it, because then this is happening. Okay, your velocity is declining, and you're getting an average of the decline rate, which again is going to be biased towards things that have more mass are going to incur more friction in most of these experiments, and therefore are going to run out of their energy sooner than things that aren't as heavy. So there's lots of things that affect, you know, how you're distributing that average. So the average won't mean anything, because it's really not the truth about what this velocity was. So he keeps doing his measurements based on the total path, that is the path from its peak velocity all the way to almost zero, which isn't going to give you the right answer. Okay, it's going to be distorted and affected, okay, by the fact that they have different rates of friction, different amounts of friction. So that's, you know, one thing for him to understand is you want to ideally make this as small an interval that's practical, you know, getting the measurement right, and as close to the point of launch. So in my experiment, I conceded there was a few errors in it, right? So I can briefly show that again, probably. All right, so I'm shooting ball bearings with a rubber band, okay, and using two of them, which isn't ideal, but it worked, frankly. And then just one of them, like a slingshot. I'm just shooting them and seeing what their velocity is. All right, that being said, but the trick was I was doing it kind of sloppy. I wasn't being, like I said, all I wanted to prove is the right answer isn't 1.28. I was just trying to prove that no, it's going to move a lot faster than that. That the single ball bearing only moves 1.28 the speed of the double ball bearings, right? And no, it's twice the speed. But anyway, so when I took my intervals, the fact is the fast ball bearing is going very fast, twice as fast in my opinion, or like pretty close to it. And so I would trigger when I'm going to measure it by trying to see when I first saw it in the image. So I was always measuring, you know, the little one, okay, here on the scale. So it's moving this way on the scale. And I was always measuring like here to here, you know, this 10 inch period, I would say, how many frames is that? But the double ones are moving much slower, so I would trigger earlier, and so I would see them here. So I'm measuring them on this scale, so they would already have more of their initial velocity, because I'm measuring them at this point rather than measuring them out here at this point. Now, the bias is that they lose their speed sooner, so part of that is almost a compensation for that fact. But who knows how much of an influence it is. Not really precise is the point. I'm not really getting the double one's maximum velocity, nor am I getting the maximum velocity of the little one. So it's not exactly a fair comparison in that sense. It's going to be distorted by the fact that I'm not really accounting for the fact that this one has traveled the longer distance before I measured its velocity, and this one traveled a shorter distance before I measured its velocity. So those will throw the numbers off. So these are all things you have to be aware of. You know, there's lots to keep track of. Now, the launching device, so this is something I think Stephen's starting to realize, is the whole idea that you have to make sure that your spring or your rubber band, okay, so I'm using a rubber band, all right, so the rubber band, well, I'll just explain the mechanism. I just have a piece of fishing line, okay, around a rubber band fixed at two points. And the fishing line goes through a pin, okay, that's in a clothespin, all right, so the clothespin has a pin in it, and the pin goes into the other side of that. So when I push on the clothespin. All right, it opens the clothespin, pulls the pin up, the pin releases the piece of fishing line, which releases the rubber band. See, if you try to do this experiment by holding it and then releasing it, the fact is your fingers are really slow, and they create quite a bit of rubber band goes much faster than your fingers, and there's drag, and so you're really just losing the initial energy because the rubber band moves slower than it would have because it's dragging the thread through your fingers. So you want it to release all at once. So you want a quick release is a term used. You want a quick release. One that doesn't absorb any of the energy in the releasing process. Right? So that's why I did this, is because I realized, yeah, I can't just pull it back to a location and look at it and then let it go. And that I would always be a different location too. This means it's all fixed because this is fixed, the needle's fixed, the string is fixed, the rubber band. So it's always the same. And I was getting very consistent roll rates. Okay, the numbers were really close to, there was very few aberrants. But there still was some because I didn't bother worrying too much about how I was putting these two things in here. So the idea is that obviously they have to be able to push each other. They have to be pushed first by the rubber band. And the fact is that this is a bit exaggerated. Obviously, the rubber band's more like this, okay? So now you have a problem where there's friction between the rubber band and the ball bearing itself. The fact is the ball bearing wants to roll. You can't roll. So the high-speed ones are skidding as they come out, not rolling. So that's another reason, you know, it's not quite ideal. And the slower the speed, the more likely it is some of their angular momentum now, some of their momentum, their linear momentum, has been converted into rolling momentum. So they obviously aren't going quite as fast as they would go if they were skidding. Yeah. So these are all things you have to consider. So yeah, I could idealize this by making, you know, a little patch here of not like tape or something so that it's nothing sticky. You know, the rubber band isn't actually touching the ball bearing. And you know, make it more consistent. But these are all things you worry about if you're doing this experiment in some sort of technical way where you want to say, I'm proving. Okay, all I want to say is, the only thing I'm proving is this is a nonsense number. That was my only ambition, is to prove that anything below one, anything 1.4 and below is absolute nonsense. Clearly not the right answer. And if your theory says that's the truth, then your theory is garbage because that's not what happens. And so for the sake of argument, my results were far enough ahead, you know, 1.8 kind of number, that why should I care about your 1.4 theory, because it's completely easily debunked by even a crude experiment debunks it, an imperfect experiment. All right, so what else is there to say? So the point is every one of Steven's videos, there's these simple little things that he's not accounting for. And, you know, his launchers always have flaws in them, frankly. I mean, he was using a mechanism that used gravity to push something, and he didn't realize that I can't push it harder with 4 pounds than I can push it with 2 pounds if I'm using gravity, because the velocities won't be different. 2 pounds drops with the same speed as the 4 pounds, so I don't get more velocity out of it. Yeah, I get more torque, but I don't get more velocity. So if you're trying to push something with a velocity, it's not going to do you any good to push it with a 100-pound person or a 50-pound person. If you're only pushing 10 miles an hour, both can do it, and you're not going to see any difference. You know, if the limitation is the velocity, if what you're going to take away is the velocity, the 10-ton train and the 5-ton train have a different velocity. But if you gave them the same velocity, you can understand that they can only give away the same amount of velocity in the thing they hit, and therefore they would lose the same energy when they hit something. See, when the 10-ton train going 5 miles an hour hits something, it's technically giving away less energy. So if you get hit by a 10-ton train, you'll absorb, you know, going 5 miles an hour, you'll absorb less energy than you get hit by a 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour. You'll take less energy from the train because the 10-mile-an-hour train can give you more because it can give you more velocity. It can't change your mass. All it can do is change your velocity. So obviously the 10-ton train can hit a lot more people. because it didn't give away as much energy each time it hits one. You know, I mean, so the total energy doesn't change. It doesn't. You can't change the fact that they both have the same reservoir of energy to give away. And all you're really saying is because of the different velocity, they'll give away more of it. So the 5-ton train clearly gives away more energy. If I put a row of people, you know, for the 5- and 10-ton train to hit, and I have a row of people, they're going to hit them. Well, the 5-ton train is going to be giving away twice as much almost energy per person it hits. So obviously its reservoir of energy is going to decline very quickly, okay, where the 10-ton train is going to just keep going because it's giving less energy per stick it's hitting. So it can hit more sticks. Just a fact. All right. But if you add up the distance, all the sticks fly. If you say, well, how far did each one go? How far did each person it hit go? Kind of thing. Well, they don't really go anywhere. So that's another problem. They really stick to the train. But anyway, how much energy they'd absorb. And you just add up how much energy they absorb. And when you add up all the energies absorbed, you'll find that the 10-ton train going 5 miles an hour has exactly the same amount of energy as the 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour. All right. So do I have to point out anything else here? I'm just saying there's all these little details that you have to be kind of careful about. So understanding when you're pushing something, you want to give it a velocity. You can't have air or some other crap in the way. You have to have contact with a spring if you want to absorb the energy of the spring. You have to stay in contact with the spring. If you lose contact with the spring, then the spring is going to lose some of its energy that you're not going to realize. You're not going to feel it. You're not going to get pushed by it. And so understanding the difference between hitting and pushing, important. And then understanding that velocity is constantly declining in our friction-filled world. And so if you're going to take a measurement, you want to take a measurement in as small a space as close to the event as possible. And if you do those two things, Brozo, I think you'll start to realize your results have been way off. All right. So, probably enough. I mean, you could go ragging on and on, but what's the point? I mean, it's just so weird and strange and bizarre for somebody to claim he's done the air track thing when he hasn't done anything with it. And now he's ready to dispose of it because he's completed the air track mission. And he hasn't even, I mean, nothing. It's just bizarre, frankly. I mean, clearly you ought to just concede the air track he made isn't good enough. I think it is to do some of these experiments. I mean, shit, you should be able to get enough of the air track level and smooth enough to do... I mean, all you need is like 2 feet of air track. You don't need that much to do these spring experiments. Anyway, this... You know, I guess I have to make one. Yeah. Just irritating. Shouldn't have to. This should get done by physicists, frankly. We should be able to get the people that already have really good ones and get them to just do the freaking experiments. Damn. Everybody should agree they should be doing the experiments. Everybody should agree that why aren't they doing the experiments? Everybody should agree it would be really brilliant for them to do the Eddington experiment from the stupid space station, where there's 400 times better resolution and you don't need an eclipse and you can use a GoPro camera. Shit. But no, instead, you just do this naysaying and snarkyisms. Okay, got it. Fuck, it's just too silly a world. Yeah, it really has, you know, it's gotten stupid in so many, so profoundly stupid. Just one, you know, just as, and I had to unfortunately be witness to it. The devolution of humankind. I mean, it's been going on since, for a while, right? Since Newton. Yeah, really. It's all downhill since, whatever, 1650. Obviously, there were some good things between then and now, but just the whole character of the human being, I suppose. In terms of human character, it's been all downhill. Mostly. Alright, anyway, enough of this crap. So, I think that's all there needs to be said. So, I mean, I can redo the, you know, rolling ball thing. I just don't, I feel it's almost embarrassing to have to keep, you know, pointing this out and saying, what, you have to do these experiments and you've got to know what the right answer is. I really shouldn't have to do them. They're just so it's stupid. It's almost like, oh, well, here, I'll do the gravity experiment. Look, it always goes down. Shouldn't have to prove that. Anyway, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. This has been a DraftPhysics.com video presentation.